Welcome to the weekend edition of the Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. On today's program, we got a lot to cover, as always, and looking forward to introducing you to today's guests. But in addition to that, I do want to mention that the Price of Business, which is one of the longest running business shows in the country, continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com. We are adding new content all the time. There you can see all of our regular guests. We have reoccurring guests from Fox Business, from Yahoo Finance, gentlemen like Cody Willard, who was a longtime CNBC and Fox Business anchor. He's on this program every single week. And so we're excited by the talent that we bring you. Also, I do want to mention I've got a book called Making New Rich Books Work for You, and exclusively for our listeners of this program. It's available at a ridiculously low price. If you want to get more information about that, go to priceofbusiness.com. If you read anything by people like Tim Ferriss or Robert Kiyosaki, who's been on my show many, many times, and you know, really were excited but had little to show for it when you try to pursue those things, my book explains why. There's something going on, and the problem really isn't with these authors. It's usually with the reader. And you can get more information about that at priceofbusiness.com. With that, here's our first guest right here on The Price of Business.
Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. By the way, you know, we've been around since 2001. We're one of the longest continuously running business shows in the country. And it's funny, people say we love your podcast, and of course we have a podcast. But we're also in radio markets from coast to coast, from Washington State to Washington, D.C. One of my favorite people to talk to on this program is my guest this segment, one of the country and world's leading business brokers. Gene Townley is always glad to have you on the program. By the way, his website is easily found at dynamitebrokers.com. That's dynamitebrokers.com. You've got to check out what he's doing. And Gene, always love having you on the program. We've got some really interesting questions. You're generating great questions, and people are hungry for the information you're providing. This one today that we're talking about is about why am I not familiar with business brokers? That was a question we got from a couple of people, in fact, which I thought is, and they're both business owners. It's shockingly not well known. You know, and people, even though there's been a lot of DIY home selling, people are a lot more inclined to have a realtor involved in the selling of their house than they are in the selling of their business. I find this really confusing. Frankly, I find it troubling. And a lot of times I think it's, you know, penny wise, dollar foolish. I don't want to give that commission. Really? You're going to make so much more if you do? I don't get it. So what's your experience with this? Do you encounter people, Gene, that are surprised to find out there's people like you that do what you do?
I encounter that almost every single day. There's a lot of people out there that have never heard of a business broker. In my own entrepreneurial walk, until I was in a networking group, oh goodness, I guess it's been, you know, 18, 19 years ago, I had never heard of one. I would get tired of a business and just close it and go do something else. I'd never, for whatever reason, had never thought of selling them. Now, once I used the business broker to sell the first business, I was ready to, like, almost give it away, and he got me over $160,000 for it. Of course, I was sold.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that a business broker does that people do not realize. Number one, they're going to evaluate that business and be able to know what sinkholes, what traps, et cetera, are in the financials, where there are weaknesses, and be able to overcome those. Be able to have an explanation that, yes, you know, the numbers may be trending down for the last 2 years, but you have to remember the seller had a heart attack 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he has not been as engaged, for instance. Also, your business broker is going to have the knowledge of which banks actually can close this loan through SBA. And that is huge. I can't tell you how often I see deals that people try to go at it themselves. And it's not that the buyer's a bad person. It's not the seller's got a bad business. They're both great. But they don't go to the right banking SBA expert to get the loan, so the deal falls apart. Also, the right business broker is going to sell the business confidentially. And with us, that's huge. And the reason, there's several reasons why it's a big deal. Number one, if you lose employees before the transfer, there's a good chance that you're going to lose either value or possibly the whole deal. You don't want anybody to know that you're selling. And I know most people out there are going, then how in the world do you sell this? But we do it 100% confidentially. And more often than not, I'd say 95, 99% of the time, the buyer and seller leave the closing table to go tell the employees that, guess what, you know, I've taken on a partner, I've sold the business, whatever the story is going to be. And nobody in the organization even knew it was for sale. So, again, there are a lot of times that business transactions do not get completed. So, therefore, you don't want to introduce a possible buyer to anybody in the company, because then if it doesn't go through, you've got egg all over your face and probably lost a lot of trust.
Yeah, and not only egg, right? You've got a lot of insecurity. You've got a lot of insecurity in your organization. All of a sudden, they wake up to the reality it's a question of when, not if, you're going to sell, because we already tried and it didn't work out. I mean, this is really, really quite important. And it's one of these things that if you don't think about business selling, if you're not in this space, you're going to get a lot of trial and error. An error that can cost you millions can ruin your reputation and it can create incredible morale problems in your organization.
That is exactly correct. And there's, as with anything, there's a lot of bad actors that pose as an investor wanting to buy a business. And when you deal with that, you need somebody, an expert on your side, that can spot these people and know the right thing to ask to make sure before you open your books to them that they can complete the transaction. Also, business brokers can structure the deal in a manner that help you avoid capital gains tax. There are ways out there to defer or avoid capital gains tax on the whole transaction. Again, with an expert, they can point you in the right direction and help this occur. You know, there's also the numerous hurdles that can be avoided by using an expert. And I know a lot of people say, well, you know, paying a commission, I think I can do it myself. And there may be some that can, but I've seen so many people damage their business severely trying to do it themselves. And, you know, they should have just gotten an expert. There's numbers out there that prove that using a broker, a bona fide, well-respected, experienced broker will net you over 22% more on your transaction. So it doesn't matter if your commission's 10%, 12%, you're going to net 22% more. So you're still positive, you know, 10 or 12% above the cost. There's no reason not to let an expert do this. You know, you probably wouldn't let your next door neighbor do your heart surgery. Next to your health, this is probably, for many people, the biggest decision they'll ever make, especially the biggest financial decision. You really should seek an expert.
You know, and regardless if someone is completely capable, in fact, even if they are a broker themselves and have, you know, credentials similar to yours, it may not even be wise to sell their own business, right? Because you'll get a level of politeness from a buyer who won't even go to places he or she really has to go to buy the business because they're dealing with the actual owner. They know there's a lack of objectivity. There's a lack of detachment that makes what you do so crucial. It's not only the skills, it's your emotional positioning that I think makes your work so important.
You are correct again. There's a lot to be said for a third-party, non-attached negotiator to help wade through this on your behalf.
Yeah, no question about it. Final thoughts as we begin to wrap it up. I do want to mention real quick, you mentioned the word expert frequently, and that's one of those things that is a problem in the business brokering world. You can become a broker depending on the state, depending on a lot of legal factors. With a very, very low threshold of entrance. In some places, anyone and their dog can call themselves a business broker. And so what's imperative is that when is really vetting people. You've got someone like, in the case of Gene, globally recognized by the International Business Brokers Association, which is one of the largest associations of its type, as one of the top 5 business brokers, not only in the United States, but around the world. That's the kind of validation I'm looking for because it's not like an attorney where they have to have passed the bar and maybe even have specialization and that type of thing. There's a lot of flexibility in calling yourself a broker that requires more serious vetting, and the best vetting is the type that shows performance. And man, that's you reek of performance, Gene. Final thought as you wrap it up.
Yes, you just hit on a huge thing. When you are looking for a broker, you need to interview them. Ask them how many deals they closed last month, last year. What's their average percentage? I can tell you that across the market, of the businesses currently for sale, only 20% of those will ever sell. So knowing those numbers, it's even more important to make sure you get an expert that moves businesses. One of the biggest ways, make sure that the only time they get money is at the closing table. If they get money for evaluations, for advertising, listing fees, they're not going to be as hungry as if they have to close deals to put food on the table.
Yep. Very good point to end on. Thanks so much, Gene Townley. By the way, his website is, I want to mention again, dynamitebrokers.com. And we'll have a link to that at priceofbusiness.com. Stay tuned for more after this.
Welcome to the Igniting Your Dynamic Self Show, sponsored by heartsofwellness.com, where strength meets soul. I'm Wendy Bjork, the MS mentor, bestselling author, wellness guide, and I help women navigating multiple sclerosis take charge of their healing journey, mind, body, and spirit, one holistic step at a time. You're not alone. This is your safe space to rise. Today, we're diving into a topic that resonates deeply with so many of us. If you've ever felt like your condition puts limits on your dreams, this episode is your reset. You're not broken. You're becoming balanced. Let's release the blocks to abundance together. Grab a journal and a pen because, as always, it's going to be really good. Let's begin exploring blocks to abundance, even if you're living with a chronic condition like MS. Our upcoming Radiant Calm Immersion at heartsofwellness.com/library is another great step to take today on your path to wholeness. This message is in perfect harmony with the energy of today and for October. It's something that whispers, let go of what drains your light so your soul can prosper. It's a cosmic invitation to release toxins, emotional heaviness, and outdated beliefs. For those of us living with MS or another chronic challenge, the energy reminds us that healing and abundance aren't separate. They rise together, and we're called to restore balance between rest and action, giving and receiving, body and spirit. This balance is your sweet spot. What if we release the belief that Our condition limits our prosperity. Let that go, because your energy, not your diagnosis, is your currency. When we let go of what drains our light so that our soul can prosper, that's where healing begins. Let's be honest. When we live with a chronic condition, our nervous system is often in overdrive, protecting, bracing, anticipating. The constant vigilance quietly signals our body, there isn't enough and I'm not safe. And over time, that energy translates into scarcity, in health, in time, even in money. You might find yourself thinking, I can't do what others can. My body won't let me. I need to hold on tightly because I don't know when the next flare or the next expense will hit. But here's the truth. Those thoughts are not your destiny. They're echoes of survival. Your body has been doing its best to keep you safe, but it can't distinguish between emotional danger and physical danger. When fear becomes the dominant vibration, your abundance channel narrows, not because you're unworthy, but because you've been protecting yourself from being perceived from loss or from disappointment. You might also notice that the same energetic pattern shows up in multiple areas of your life. Scarcity of time, scarcity of energy, scarcity of joy. The good news, yes, there's good news. When you begin to release one layer, the others follow. And you don't have to fix everything. You simply have to create small openings where light can enter. This gives us permission to release the survival mode and activate our sovereignty. And every time you choose calm over control or faith over fear, you dissolve a layer of energetic resistance. You shift from reacting to creating. And that's the first true step toward healing your relationship with abundance, even if your physical body still has limits. Let's do an abundance reframe. Abundance isn't a bank balance, it's a frequency. It begins with how open your nervous system feels to receive. That means seeing yourself as inherently valuable, even when your body moves slower or your energy shifts daily. But remember, your worth is not based on productivity. It's based on your presence, your peace of mind, your resilience, your ability to stay grounded through uncertainty. That is your wealth. You radiate prosperity every time you honor your energy instead of forcing it. The abundance blooms through your words and ideas. Your voice carries medicine. When you share your experience, your wisdom, you circulate energy, and that circulation is abundance. Each time you speak truth, you open the energetic flow of giving and receiving. Abundance at its highest vibration is all about allowing energy to move freely through money, creativity, time, or even joy. And when you hold back your voice or doubt your value, that flow constricts. But when you offer yourself permission to shine, no matter what your physical condition looks like, you signal to the universe, you trust you're part of the flow, open to receive. When you live with MS, abundance often flows through allowing, not achieving. It's through alignment, not effort. When you feel safe to receive, your body and maybe your bank account both begin to heal. As you move through today and even the rest of the month, remember the invitation. Balance creates flow. Remember to rest when your body asks you to. Always speak kindly to yourself. Your words shape your world. And take one inspired action that feels aligned, not forced. I'd like to share two journal prompts to deepen your integration. The first one is, where have I been believing that my condition limits my abundance? And the second one, what new peaceful way can I allow prosperity to flow into my life this week and the rest of the month? Even one gentle reframe can unlock miracles because abundance responds to alignment, not effort. Remember, to feel some peace, some calm in your nervous system, join us on the Radiant Calm Immersion Masterclass. And you can find the link at heartsofwellness.com/library. If this message touched your heart, share it with a friend who's walking on her healing path. Because your abundance begins in your calm. Your body is not your barrier. It's your guide, showing you how to live in deeper balance and grace. Until next time, stay radiant, stay rooted, and keep shining your light. And remember to join me inside the Radiant Calm Immersion at heartsofwellness.com/library.
The article with the headline, Upscaling is the Key to the American Emotional Recession. Welcome to the 29th article in this series, Be the Leader You Aspire to Be, here on the Price of Business show, where we'll focus on the trends which lie ahead of us and how they will affect humans and businesses. The articles are based on my book, Energetic Leadership, which talks about 9 trends leaders must navigate to cater for employees' increasing demand for more spiritual leadership and sustainable business models aligned with their life purposes. These articles are about business leadership in the new era. I hope you'll find inspiration for your own leadership and the leader you aspire to be. The articles have outlined 9 trends for business leadership and focused on authentic curiosity as a key competency for leaders to master. They have explained the concept of energy frequencies as the source of our true potential, followed by the alignment of the company's purpose with the life purposes of employees and customers. They have covered the 6 to 5 different generations currently working, focused on self-care and the ability to be present, and what uncertainty was about and how to navigate in it. They have talked about the importance of intuition in decision-making and what a healthy economy and society are and how we can all improve democracy. The articles have looked at customer journeys built on healthy energy and how intuition and resilience can improve productivity. They have been about the world as a mirror of how we are doing as multidimensional humans, what we do with true AI, how change management must change, both in terms of timelines and content, and the urgent need for a new leadership playbook linked to simple strategies which are about people first and foremost, based on curiosity, consciousness, and freedom, and how we get there. In this article, I look at upscaling, the new business buzzword, and I set it in relation to the American emotional recession. The word upscaling means the action of increasing the size or improving the quality of something. So here I use the word upscaling in relation to upscaling the amount and quality of education of managers and employees in organizations, plus taking actions to do so. I said upscaling in relation to what the CEO John Clifton at Gallup named the American Emotional Recession when he talked about the fall in the employee engagement score in the US at the Semaphore Summit in April 2025, based on Gallup's global study on employee engagement. I'm sure we can have emotional recessions for lots of reasons, as we have a lot going on in our societies now. But when it comes to our work and workplace, we wake up and go to work because we want to do well. I do not think any of us wake up and say, today I will go to work and do a bad job. So, as managers and employees, we want to do well and succeed in the job we have. To do well, we need to have the skills and competencies required for the job, and we need that to happen through good onboarding. The CEO, John Clifton, mentioned that the biggest challenge lies with management principles and practices, as 56% of managers have not been trained for their job. It is very basic and may be boring, but managers need to have the skills and competencies required to be a manager for other people, like people skills and technical skills. When managers are trained, productivity increases by 49%. But what happens when you are in a job where you do not have the right skills and competence? You start to lose your own and others' confidence, which then results in lower performance, both in form of productivity and engagement. What often happens is that we are trained in technical skills, the product we sell or the service, how to use the computer, or now the hottest training is prompt engineering. But what use is that, especially for managers, if he or she are not trained in how to lead other people. It could be skills like personal insight or interrelational tools. One underperforming manager can lead to a whole team underperforming, leading to a whole company underperforming, leading to a whole country not performing according to its potential. That is sad for all involved, and it can lead to an emotional recession. Upscaling managers, by giving them skills to lead energy, is crucial for the impact on business and engagement. I call it energetic leadership.
Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. And it has been a while since we've had this guest on. Chris Kidd, a longtime regular on the Price of Business Show. He is a serial entrepreneur. He is a business coach. He is really someone incredibly well-versed in the business of sports, which is one of our favorite pastimes to talk about. And for some of my all-time favorite interviews in the history of the show, which next year is 25 years, and really hard to believe, in the history of the show has been with guests that Chris has arranged for us. And my guests without Chris are New York Times best-selling authors, several billionaires, Fortune 500 CEOs. But Chris, you brought some of my favorites, which include celebrities, people who have performed in movies like A Christmas Story, as well as professional athletes, some of them legends. And so it is always glad to have you back on to talk about what you do, which is help people, particularly in trying economic times like we're in now. And my audience has been asking about this. What do we do about this? What do we do about that? You know, and it's probably the same issues that you're helping your clients with currently. So a little bit about your practice, the work you do, and the single best website to get more information.
Well, the thing that it really boils down to is I sell people speed. I help them go from where they're at to where it is that they want to go with their business, their finances, and their investments. And so I just started saying I'm a speed dealer, just not the speed that some of us think of. And really, the easiest way to get a hold of me, just go to chriskidd.com, chriskidd.com, and that's where people can find out more about me.
Very good. Talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing with your clientele. Why are people becoming clients now compared to just a few years ago? Or maybe pre-COVID may be a good benchmark.
Well, it's one of the two. It's usually either somebody's coming to me because their business is stuck or they've got some sort of an issue that they can't seem to solve, and they know that they don't know something that they need to know. And the first thing we do is figure out, okay, well, what are some of the issues here? Let's figure out how we can increase revenue anywhere from 30% to 50% in the next 90 days. Part of that, we cut wasteful expenses that are unnecessary, and we find what's the best use of capital. Because, and the same with my investing clients, a lot of them are coming to me because there's so much uncertainty in the market, but I know we both like baseball, so I kind of describe it as like finding the sweet spot on the bat. Like if you hit it on the tip of the bat or the handle, you're not going to get a very good hit out of that. But if you can hit it on the sweet spot, that's when you knock it out of the park. So I help my clients find the sweet spot.
Yeah, and you also help your clients. We talked about this before, and we do like baseball, and we do like baseball analogies. You like small ball. I like small ball, too, because if you don't look at the details, if you're not watching where your money's going, your money will evaporate. It's magical. Black magic, but magic nonetheless. You're big into small ball as well.
Yeah, and that's actually the first step that I do with my clients. In fact, I had a call with a client this morning, a new one, and I said, your first homework assignment is for the next 30 days. You're going to track every penny that you spend. Like, itemize it. Whatever you use that you'll use, whether it's your phone or a notepad, I always carried a notepad with a little pen. something that would fit in my pocket. But I said, whatever it is, write down every time you spend money and what it is. And even when you go to the grocery store, don't write groceries. Itemize that grocery list so that you know, okay, here's the stupid stuff that I'm spending money on that I can redirect. Like I think I've told you my Flamin' Hot Cheeto story before. I used to, that was my weakness. I'd grab a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos on the way out at the cash register, and it was only 97 cents back then. I think they're like, you know, $3 now. But
yeah,
I was like, okay, well, this, you know, this little bit, or my $60 a month I was spending on Diet Coke at Sonic, I can redirect this and I can start putting that into my investment accounts rather than throwing it away on something that has no nutritional value. And in fact, it's going to be an adverse effect on my nutrition.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No question about it. And so, and what happens is that I think a big problem a lot of people have, and I've been talking about this on the show, is vagueness around their money. They have a lot of vagueness around their money. Some of that is because they want to have more swagger and think they have more money than they actually have, but they know at some level that they're really not sure and they may be really off, and the more they look, the more unpleasantly surprised they're going to be. But be unpleasantly surprised, because that's how you mitigate that kind of problem. That's how you turn things around. You got to get rid of vagueness. And your example of taking note of what you're actually spending is one of the best tools for eliminating vagueness.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you really have to know and have the clearer picture that you have, the more you can do about it. And a lot of people, like you said, they don't want to face reality and accept the fact that, okay, it's really not as good as what I think. So I don't want to accept the fact of that. And then also, a lot of people have no idea. Like, that's why I start my clients on, we're going to be conscious about the money that we're spending and understand where our money's going, so that if we are doing stupid stuff with it, if you want to go blow some money, that's fine, as long as you can afford to do it. But at least be conscious of what you're doing and don't be lazy with your money. You know, how easy is it to go, all of a sudden $1,000 disappears and you think, well, what did I spend my money on? It was only like 20 bucks here, 30 there, 50 over here at this. We went out to eat and, that stuff adds up, and it's those little bitty things that get you. It's the little things that you think, this isn't that big of a deal. And then next thing you know, there's a bigger chunk of money that's gone. I always say, watch the pennies, like, and that means like 1%. So if you have $100,000, you need to really, really focus on every thousand. If you have $10,000, you better be focused on every $100. So you want to make sure that whatever it is, focus on those pennies. Like the saying, if you take care of the pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves.
Yeah, you've got to revise that now that pennies are no longer made. Which, by the way, that is a very strong indicator of how vulnerable your money is, that they can't even afford to make pennies anymore because it costs more to make pennies than what they are worth, which, by the way, that means whatever you bought for that added up to $1.02 is now going to be $1.05. I mean, it's incredible how encroaching inflation is now on so many different levels.
Yeah, yeah, it's wild. I mean, look at gold. Gold has just flown through the roof this past year, and silver finally took off. I mean, silver for years was around, you know, $20, $18, $20, and in the 20s, and then all of a sudden it's at 50. This inflation is really, I mean, they tell us on TV and the news outlets that, oh, well, inflation is, you know, right now like 3%, 3.1% or whatever. But when you go and look at things, it really seems to be getting a whole lot worse than that. I mean, I know the price of eggs is down right now, but, you know, last year, going into January, eggs were like, had really skyrocketed. If you follow any commodities, like sugar is down right now, but there's a lot of things. Coffee was at like all-time highs recently. And, a lot of the commodities are going way higher than they used to be just because of inflation, and the dollar is worth less. In fact, that's a whole nother thing, but I tell people now, like, eliminate the word saving from your vocabulary. Like, we do not save money. We store money and we stack money, and we do it for a purpose to make that money grow. But if you save money and you have it sitting in a bank, in a mattress, in a safe, whatever, that's losing value. So you have to learn to put that money to work.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, why is coffee going through the roof? Well, I hate to tell you, most of the coffee that we import, and we mostly import coffee, is from Brazil. And you've got tariffs, including specific tariffs, just for Brazil. That's higher than virtually all tariffs, except for maybe towards China, because they don't like their country's way the country treated a former president that, for all practical purposes, trying to overthrow the government. And so, you know, a lot of this stuff is directly related to tariffs. That's why they come up. But particularly coffee. Coffee is so heavily dependent on Brazil. It's become a nightmare for that. And I like that. I like that concept of look at it in a strategic way. You know, I use it, store it. I like those terms because they're very powerful. And frankly, the word saving in the current environment almost sounds laughable.
Yeah, and saving, what I kind of came up with, saving is a defensive word. It's a scared word. We save because we're afraid of something, versus if we're storing something or stacking something up, that's because we've got a purpose and we're being more aggressive. That's an offensive word. So that was a change in my thinking just over the last few years, because I used to talk about saving, and I had to change a mentor of mine, changed my mindset and my vocabulary around that word. So the concept is still the same. You want to spend less than than is coming in, but there's a reason for the money that you're storing somewhere else. It's not like save for a rainy day or for an emergency. You know what happens when you save for a rainy day or you save in case of an emergency? That's what comes to take it. So we need to save or store money with a plan to do something with it. Like my story of becoming a millionaire at 24, that was kind of what I had gotten myself onto, is every dollar that I can redirect that's going to go towards my future and investing and in my business, I'm going to do that. And rather than spending it or just saving, like, every dollar had a purpose, and I would recycle that over and over and over.
Yeah, I've heard the analogy of consider your dollars as employees. And each employee needs to be making you money. And if you're sticking it in a mattress, which is what a bank account is, even a savings one with interest, it's essentially a mattress. And you're talking 2, 3, 4%, very laughable. You need to take a much more aggressive approach. Make that lazy dollar work.
Yeah. And well, the thing is, we're not taught that, and most of us don't have access to that information our whole lives. So, and a lot of, like, take my parents, for instance, their parents came from, like, the Great Depression era and right after that. So they had that mindset of we have to save, and then the stuff just could pass down and pass down. It's the wrong information now. It's been the wrong information for a while, but they still have that mentality. And then so many people are still taught that, even though, that's not the right thing to do or the right way to do it, and they wonder why they can't get ahead. It's because they haven't learned the rules on how to do it.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. My time with you always goes super fast. I want you to take a moment to give some final thoughts and, of course, your best website to get more information.
So I guess one of the things that I would say final thoughts is, no matter what it is that we do, we have to learn to increase our income and our, let's say, our returns, our investments. We have to put our money to work, like you said, as an employee. And one of the things, you know, the economy is, and we didn't really get into the doom and gloom, but the economy is really looking a lot scarier than what it would appear looking at the stock market. And there's some people who are out there who are really feeling it. And another thing with that is the whole AI thing is going to be eliminating a lot more jobs even. So there's skills that people need to learn and be able to adapt and not just say, okay, it's always been this way. I hope it works out. Hope's not a strategy. So nope. If anybody needs any sort of direction business-wise, financially, or like with their career, if they have uncertainty in their investments and they want to learn how to make those employees go work harder for them, they can reach out to me. Find me at chriskidd.com.
Chriskidd.com. That's K-I-D-D.com. Chris is C-H-R-I-S. Chriskidd.com. I try to make it as complicated as possible, Chris. We'll also have a link.
And Google works too. If they forget the website, which is really hard if you remember my name, but yeah. They can Google me as well, or ChatGPT, like that guy found me the other day somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. ChrisKidd.com. I'm Kevin Price. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. A friend of mine recently reminded me, did you know that your show is going to be 25 years old next year, actually in the fall of next year? I hadn't thought about it, but it's true. It's coming up quickly, and we're gonna celebrate that. That's a rarity in media. It's one of the longest continuously running business shows, which I'm proud of. And one of my favorite people to have interviewed over the years is my guest this segment, Lee Kaplan. He is really a phenomenal political pundit. He's an attorney by profession, but has been very involved in what's happening in politics and policy. And most people have a niche. You know, they like local politics, or they like, you know, national affairs or state. I'm telling you, very few people I've interviewed, and I've interviewed a lot of people, are as well-versed in all areas of government, from the most micro neighborhood to the most macro, global, than Lee Kaplan. Lee, glad to have you back on the program. Talk real quickly about your law firm. Take about a minute, if you don't mind, and give the website for that firm.
Well, thank you, and I'll only quietly and modestly diverge that very complimentary introduction. I'm a trial lawyer in Houston, although we have lawsuits in multiple parts of the country. Our law firm is Murphy Ball Stratton, and the website is at mbssmartlaw.com. We have 10 lawyers. I expect we'll have a couple more soon, but every one of our lawyers is well versed in the courts. We're a litigation firm, which means trials, mediations, arbitrations, appeals, and we've been successful by just hiring the best people we can find. We've been in existence almost 2 years, having left an earlier boutique firm, which was going to join a bigger firm, or at least many of them were, and we declined to do that and wanted to strike out on our own and had work to do from day one. So we're always open to people calling us about problems, and we talk to them, and sometimes we take cases, and sometimes we decline them. But it's mbssmartlaw.com.
Very good. Very good. Let's get into our topic today. There's a lot of conversation, of course, about the apparent shutdown ending, the federal government shutdown ending. A lot of talk. Opinions are all over the place on it, but the majority of the opinions on the left is that rude to the Democrats for blinking. That's the vast majority of what we're hearing, and that seems to be the narrative that particularly mainstream, a lot of mainstream media, but particularly liberal media, they're exhausted by a Democratic leadership that seems to have no backbone in the minds of progressive media. And, you know, they're making Schumer sound like the Neville Chamberlain of modern politics, putting peace and deals above the country is how they're arguing it. I have a little complicated, a little more complicated, I would argue more nuanced view. I'll be honest with you, when Schumer came up last week with the, hey, give us the health care for a year and we will get the government back to work, I thought that was a disastrous idea, to be perfectly honest with you, Lee, because you know right now, as we're talking, millions of Americans are being told that their ACA insurance is going to more than double, in some cases up to quadruple in cost. And if the American people don't see that happening, how are they going to be invested in making things happen with their elected officials to prevent that from happening? I actually think this proposal that allows, you know, right now millions of Americans getting educated at ACA the way they never had been before, and then in January, this continuing resolution ends. I honestly, this strategy, and I'm not saying the Democrats were smart enough to think in these terms, but this is way better than Schumer's proposal, in my opinion.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I think there are strategic considerations that both sides in the Democratic Party made, and who's to say who's correct? I guess I personally believe that the Republicans will suffer when premiums go up, because people generally vote when they're mad. And the billionaires are pretty happy with Trump right now, and they may vote. But I think there's a real good chance that other people will be angry enough that they will vote and vote out the Republicans. You know, in off-year elections, generally the party in power suffers. I think they may suffer worse than before, partly because of Trump's personality, partly because of increases in prices. And, you know, he overpromised. He said inflation would disappear. And while it is going down, you know, a lot of that inflation was gearing back up after COVID. I think people are going to be angry. And when they're angry, they vote out incumbents. So I don't think that the Democratic establishment, if you want to call it that, made a mistake by caving, or that some of them made a mistake by caving, because I think in the long run, the Republicans will be hurt by government as usual. That's my take on it, and I guess we'll just have to wait and find out in 2026 and see what happens. It's very interesting.
The problem is like I said, I don't think they knew what they were doing. I never heard anyone articulate, let the voters see what they're going to be paying, because right now they're being educated. Millions are being educated about ACA and how it's funded and its costs in a way they've never been before. They got used to having a subsidy. And so, you know, I can see things dramatically change at a two deal in January, when we have another shutdown ending, and they rise up and address this. It could be brilliant. I have never been for government shutdowns. I've always saw them as, how it's really disgusting for all of these people to collectively be increasing spending and spending literally like no tomorrow, yet not wanting to approve the spending increases. That is just so petulant and immature. This was different, though. This entire thing was different, and it was centered around that healthcare piece. And the Democratic Party has, I think, gotten a reputation of being softies. They needed something like this.
You know, what's interesting is the actual subsidies that became a sticking point were not the original ACA subsidies, but they were added subsidies that were added because of COVID. And the point the Republicans never made convincingly, at least not to me, although I understood the issue, was that these subsidies were supposed to be just to handle the COVID problem. And when COVID essentially ended, these extra subsidies, it should have ended. And that's what the fight was about. You know, the ACA was predicted to solve all kinds of problems. And when Democrats realized it didn't solve all those problems, they lathered on some extra subsidies, and now those are expiring or will expire, and people are howling. So I thought the Republicans lost the battle of the airwaves over this, but if people are angry, they will vote to out the incumbents. And I think that notwithstanding all the gerrymandering that's gone on and all the efforts that were led by Trump to get extra seats in Texas in the House, that there's a revulsion against that and that Trump will suffer a bigger defeat in 2026 than he did in these mid-year elections in 2025. So whether we'll have a new president in 2026 or a new party in power in 2028 is yet to be seen. But I think that Trump will be rendered toothless after 2026 and unless the Supreme Court bows to him. I think if the Supreme Court has a lick of backbone or sense, they will toss out these tariffs. They may find some modified way to avoid having refunds, but I thought the tariffs were the most boneheaded idea that the Republicans or Trump came up with, and that the rest of the Republicans went along with that just seems to be economic suicide. Can't possibly raise enough money to get rid of the deficit. So,
the tariffs are an existential threat, in my opinion. They're not. There's no history of them being useful in the 20th century or in modernity. It's an archaic practice. It's the type of thing that you do when you don't think wealth can still be created. Bullheaded is the perfect word for it, dangerously so. And that entire strategy is built on the idea that it's being paid for mysteriously by other countries. We're getting free money from other countries when you and I both know that Americans are paying for either in higher prices or in lower quality goods. That's the history of tariffs. And that kind of deception, that kind of arrogance, and eventually it catches up with Trump. It has to. It catches up with anyone. He's going to strip away his support. He's going to become the Democrats' best weapon.
I think that's right. And I think we will find out in 2026 and then again in 2028 that the Republicans had a great opportunity and they bungled it because their standard bearer is so focused on himself and not on the country.
Absolutely. And I actually believe that there's a possibility they pull off the Senate, which if you talk to the political pundits, that's been considered an impossibility. Now, they're not going to get enough seats to override a filibuster. But they can win the Senate. His approval is now between 10 to 20%, depending on the poll. I can't recall the last time we've seen numbers like this. He's in a real political existential crisis.
Well, the president has a way of ignoring reality. And he will continue to claim that he won that earlier election. He will probably continue to claim that inflation is virtually non-existent and the country is better off. He really doesn't talk to the right people. You know, when you have one of these star-studded, expensive events at Mar-a-Lago and you put a bunch of gold filigree in the White House and you build a new ballroom that you think is going to be paid for by rich people, that will peel away a lot of support. Do I think that Texas will suddenly vote Democratic? No, I don't. But I think that members of Congress in South Texas will be imperiled by some of the things Trump did. And I think those are seats that, notwithstanding careful gerrymandering by Greg Abbott and his subservient Texas legislature, those seats will flip again. And people are just... So... maybe at some point we'll end up with a president who has some kind of common sense. Because what Trump did with respect to Iran was valuable. With respect to Israel, I think, was valuable. With respect to the idea of the government needs to pare back some of its activities was valuable, although they're not really paring them back. I think the immigration overreach by ICE has really hurt the president too. And I don't think he recognizes that. So
yeah.
I'm predicting that at least 10 seats flip in the House, maybe 20. And I'm predicting that some Senate seats will flip. But whether the Democrats will control both houses is highly problematic. But I think there's little doubt that we'll have divided government.
Oh, yeah. And a very lame duck president, knowing it. He'll never know it. I'm sorry. I keep, referring them sometimes in reasonable terms. He won't know it, but he'll be lame duck. And as Speaker Johnson warned, Speaker Johnson's warning, you're going to have perpetual investigations once the Democrats take over. Why is that, Speaker Johnson?
If they're smart, they won't do that. I'd like to see somebody break the cycle. You know, in South Africa years and years ago, when Mandela became essentially the chieftain of South Africa, those investigations and those prosecutions slowed way down, and he almost declared amnesty for everybody. And I am hopeful that somebody has the good sense to do that. Because, there's always the Epstein files hanging over everybody's head, too. I think if I were the Democrats and I won control of either or both houses, I would try to put a brake on, I don't want to call them witch hunts, but that's what they essentially are.
Yeah. The only Democrat getting traction right now, from what I can tell, is Gavin Newsom. And it's because he's using the tactics of Donald Trump. I would love to hear what you're saying come true, but I don't see it in the current political culture. But I am hoping you're right. And Nelson Mandela, he was a different person than what we see in our leadership still today. You're talking about a guy, interestingly, in prison, he had a smuggled copy of Marcus Aurelius' Meditations in his prison that he reread dozens and dozens of times. And, it was the wisdom of a Stoic that brought incredible sanity in that transition. He's may have been the only man in the world who could have had that transition and not look like Zimbabwe did, back in the 80s and really for decades after. He was a unique player in that front. I don't see that kind of leadership in this country.
I don't either, or that kind of leadership is available but reluctant to become involved. I'm watching this guy, Bennett, in Colorado, who won't run for president. But I think Gavin Newsom, with his slick back hair, is not going to sell in the rest of the country. That's my view.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Too early to say who the nominee will be, but I'm not impressed by him or AOC or Fetterman. I was hoping that somebody like Joe Manchin, notwithstanding his sobriquet as the senator of coal country, would have had a shot at being president, but that doesn't seem to happen. Well, I think we just don't know who's going to emerge from the Democratic field.
Yeah.
And that would
be
important.
Yeah, I think you're right. Newsom reminds me of like the Gordon Gekko, think movie Wall Street, the Gordon Gekko of the Democrats. He's slick. There's nothing to me that will resonate with average Americans, which that has to be part of the calculus. Lee Kaplan, pleasure of having you on the program. No thought?
Well, thank you. This is fun. We'll see what happens next.
Yeah, we'll always have stuff to talk about. Lee Kaplan, thank you so much. I'm Kevin Price. Stay tuned for more after this.
That wraps up another Price of Business. I am glad to be with you. Really enjoyed it and enjoying our new home here on these stations around the country. I do want to remind you that the show continues 24/7. Not only do we have this weekly show that you can hear on this station, but we're on other stations around the country with a daily program as well. You can easily learn about them by visiting us at priceofbusiness.com. We affectionately say it is the show that never ends. And what we mean by that is that it continues 24/7 with the addition of new audio, video, articles, and more at priceofbusiness.com. While there, we'd like you to engage with us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Kevin Price Live and all of our sister sites as well. All right, I'm going to take a break until next time. Next week, we'll be back with you with much more information for you, and look forward to that conversation. And I want to say, again, thank you to USA Business Radio to make it possible for this to have been commercial-free, an entire hour of commercial-free. And guess what? Even more commercial-free than public radio. So we're excited about that. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on this station.